Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Welcome to the moon. I'm your host for this evening, Lawrence Ray. And today I am joined by my fantastic co-host, Ricardo Martinez and Jerry. But most importantly, today we are interviewing Bitcoiner Herman Vivier of Bitcoin Akazi, a project, I believe, inspired by Bitcoin Beach, in which a Bitcoin economy is being created in South Africa. Herman, how are you doing today?
How's it, man? Yeah, doing all right. Doing all right.
Hanging in there. Yeah, we like to go for a quick intro, get straight to business. Now that messing around. But yeah, I guess, well, the first question that will be a good place to start off will be for you to tell us, hey, Bitcoin Akazi, what's it about? What's the basics? Just so people listening can understand and get completely up to speed with the knowledge that we all have here about the project, the simple stuff.
Yeah, cool, man. I'll give you a quick overview. It's basically literally inspired directly by Bitcoin Beach. We're also supported by Bitcoin Beach at the moment. And we're basically just trying to copy paste what they did in a different setting. So obviously we're adapting it to local circumstances. Not everything is a straight copy paste, but it's an adaptation of what they did there. So basically we're trying to kickstart a Bitcoin circular economy in a South African township. It's a very poor neighborhood. And we're using as a platform, we're using a nonprofit organization that my wife and I have been running for the last 10 years. So we've got a pretty solid platform in the community. We've been working with them for several years. We have coaches who have been running this program since 2016, 2017. And we're using that NPO as a trusted foot in the door, which is kind of similar to how it developed with Bitcoin Beach. They had pre-existing programs, which they then used to implement Bitcoin in the community.
Yeah, and we were talking to Bitcoin Lake as well, which in Guatemala, I think it was from memory, and similarly, they didn't have an NPO, but they were like already had been in the area quite a lot doing work. And so they kind of knew the area and knew kind of how Bitcoin could help. When it comes to where you guys are, I guess when it goes back to you starting the NPO, like what's the story behind that originally with yourself and your wife, like deciding to do that? Was it like, are you from like near to the area, or like what's the story around that?
We started a business, a tourism business in 2010, and we wanted to give people who come on our trips, we organized 2-week holiday surf trips. And we wanted to give tourists a slightly different experience. South Africa, just as a bit of historical context, I think most people are quite familiar with the history, but it's a very, very divided society. So because of the history with apartheid, there's inequality in lots of countries around the world, but in South Africa, it's particularly pronounced. You could literally cross the highway from one side to another, and there would be $10 million mansions on the one side and people living in absolute nothingness on the other side of the highway. So it's a very divided society. The one thing that makes it strange is that because of the history, you can kind of feel like you're visiting Europe when you're visiting South Africa, because the inequality is hidden from view. It's not an obvious sight. It's normally hidden around the corner or whatever. And this is also because of the history in South Africa. So we wanted to give tourists a taste of what it's really like for millions of people living in South Africa, rather than just have them have a very typical tourist experience. So we developed the NPO with that idea in mind, to incorporate that with the tourism and give people just a slightly more, you know, a realistic taste of what the country is like behind the scenes, because it's really easy to miss traveling the regular tourist routes. It's not the kind of inequality that's in your face. It's very pronounced, but you kind of have to seek it out to experience it.
Gotcha. So it sounds like it's kind of like you kind of got to take some like turns that usually tourists wouldn't take, maybe, and then it's right there. But like, yeah, you usually just wouldn't have to go like left and right off the side of the main street that you're told to go on, maybe by like tourist guides. That's interesting. And so then obviously you guys decide to do that to kind of give people the reality of the situation and then show them what's going on. And then it's like, okay, well, let's also like start set up the MPO and try to help the people in the local area kind of, you know, improve and not be in that situation, which is pretty cool. So yeah, I guess. And then when was it that you realized, hey, this is something that I can kind of, you know, when did you see the Bitcoin Beach side of things and go, oh, this actually could work? Like, is it, have you been someone who's been interested in Bitcoin for a while, or like, was it Bitcoin and then you found out about that, then this, or was it that this got you interested in Bitcoin, or how's this kind of story around that, like the switch from the MPO to going, okay, let's turn this into like a Bitcoin related project?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I've been very, very interested in Bitcoin for a long time. I was originally introduced by a friend of mine who gave me a copy of Bitcoin magazine in 2013. Vitalik was still writing for the magazine back then. And it struck me as something that's kind of like, I don't know how to put it, but it was a fascinating occurrence to me that you had this thing where there was very, very strict rules according to how you could operate within the system, but those rules were not under the control of a particular group of people. And that just seemed inherently fair to me. I've obviously been very interested in fairness, seeing the line of work that I'm in. I read up about it as much as I could, but I only really thought about incorporating Bitcoin into the NPO when I heard an interview with Michael Peterson, and so that was in late 2019 for the first time. I heard him on the What Bitcoin Did podcast. Peter McCormack interviewed him, and even the host, McCormack, wasn't particularly, he wasn't really sold on the idea, and it was still very early days. They hadn't really gotten the circular economy thing going yet. But the idea was kind of, it struck me because, I mean, I'd obviously been into Bitcoin for a long time, but I realized that Bitcoin was going to have to be used by everyday people as an ordinary part of life if it's going to accomplish what it's promising to accomplish. It's not going to do much for the world if Bitcoin is just something that a fringe minority of people are investing in as a speculation against the collapse of currencies or whatever. You know, it's actually going to have to be used on a daily basis for it to deliver on its promise. And so when I heard Mike talk about what they were doing, I thought that was a very clever way to get it into the hands of people who would use it as an ordinary currency rather than a speculative asset. So that was, that was late 2019. But I kind of had to wait for the NPO to actually get a Bitcoin donation before we could get going. I wasn't going to use funds from the NPO, from the NPO's bank account, to go and buy a Bitcoin to start this thing. So kind of sat with the idea, and then in mid 2021, somebody donated some Bitcoin to the NPO, and I thought, okay, well, you know, that's kind of not a risk-free way of starting it, but it's a way that's gonna, you know, limit the risk as far as possible.
Herman, I wanted to ask you, you just mentioned donations. Are you guys existing solely on donations as the source of Bitcoin? Because I interviewed Warren Gray of Currency, and he was explaining to me that South Africa has like some strange exchange laws, which creates kind of like a premium on Bitcoin, and it's harder to acquire there than it is in other places.
We are basically taking the donation model that we had for the NPO and just switching it over to a Bitcoin standard. So we are asking for Bitcoin donations rather than fiat donations, but the NPO was 100% donation based before we started Bitcoin Ekasi, and now with Bitcoin Ekasi it's still 100% donation based. It's just that the donations are coming in Bitcoin rather than fiat. And to your second question, yes, South Africa has very, very historically very strict exchange controls. It's very difficult to move money in and out of the country. If for example, somebody donated $100 in cash to our NPO, I'd actually ask the person to go and exchange that for me, because as a South African, I can't actually exchange foreign currency. I can't walk into a bank or a bureau to change at the airport and change currency unless I had a foreign passport. And even if I had a foreign passport, if there was any form of permanent residence stamped in that passport, then I still wouldn't be able to change it. So yeah, exchange controls are pretty strict. It leads to it's not a massive premium. It's probably about 5%. So if you take the price of Bitcoin on international exchanges, and you convert the price with the dollar rand exchange rate, the Bitcoin price in South African rand is always slightly higher. There is a bit of a premium on it. It's historically been, you are, don't quote me on this, but it's probably about 5%, not much more than that.
It's interesting on the different premiums that get paid in different countries and for the various reasons why. And I know there was last year where they did this whole rule about people had exchanges and stuff couldn't, it was all to do with money not leaving the country, right? There was this whole tightening up on that. I saw that occur, and then I saw those people saying, well, actually it's Bitcoin is legal tender in El Salvador, so does that consist as a foreign currency rather than a commodity or et cetera. So I thought it was quite interesting to see that. I don't know what the outcome of that ever was, but I know that the rules haven't changed around the Bitcoin, the crypto / money leaving the country as part of the exchange process. So I know a lot more people went peer to peer in South Africa at around that time, which makes sense. And in Nigeria, the same thing happened as well around peer to peer.
Yeah, there's some even stricter rules coming, if I understand it correctly. I think the rule that you might be referring to is called the travel rule. So they actually want to try and implement it in a way that whatever Bitcoin is bought on South African exchanges is not transferred to wallets that are hosted outside of the South African jurisdiction. I don't know how they're going to try and enforce that. But it's something that's obviously been discussed in many other places around the world as well. I think governments in general have quite a big problem with the idea of self-hosting your funds. because if it's on the blockchain, there is no jurisdiction really. I think the rules are going to become even stricter.
This is the thing, a lot of companies, when it comes to custody and a lot of the regulations in different Southeast Asian countries, and then as you said, South Africa has the travel rule, and a lot of it is if you're starting an exchange in this country, you have to hold the funds in the country. And it's how do you know? Okay, we could use a custody provider. You could go and use one of the random custodies, BitGo, Fireblocks, whatever. And then you could be where's the money? And it's on the blockchain. I don't really who has the paper with the keys written on them. Is that what we're getting at? It's a little bit weird. I don't think they quite understand it. But I saw an article from, I think it was on the news about the UK, and they apparently have no issue with self-hosted wallets or something to that effect, which was at least something encouraging in this world of governments hating crypto. But yeah, it's an interesting development, that's for sure.
Regarding your work with Bitcoin Akasi, how far have you come when it comes to achieving your goals? And, what are the biggest challenges you face? Going around, preaching the gospel of Bitcoin, obviously, from personal experience, might not go down well with constituted authority. And so what are the biggest challenges you've faced, trying to, reach your goals for the circular economy?
By and far, one of the biggest challenges is the belief that Bitcoin is a scam. So we run into that a lot. In the beginning, Bitrefill was one of the most convenient and easily accessible ways to actually demonstrate to people that it's not a scam, particularly because, if you can buy phone credits and you can instantly exchange something for something like phone credits, people would, sort of take notice and go, oh, that's interesting. But still, it's been it's coming up on a year now that we've been trying to implement this, and there's still a very, very, a lot of mistrust in something like this. It's obviously unfamiliar. People have a general mistrust of the banking system in South Africa. So you would see, I mean, it's quite strange. I'm not sure why South Africa has not really had the history with banking scandals. It's got a very tightly regulated banking sector, very conservative laws that govern banks. But still, on payday, you would see long queues outside the cash machines. People literally withdraw everything from their bank account and would live, you know, on a day-to-day with physical hard cash. So something that's digital like Bitcoin sort of reminds people of, you know, this money that you can't touch. So they prefer paper currency. So that's been, yeah, it's been tough to convince people that it's real money. That's been really tough. Obviously, the other challenge is the volatility. That's quite a big challenge. We've been trying to deal with that by just keeping things as small as possible. You know, we haven't gone all out, and we haven't convinced anyone to convert their life savings into Bitcoin. It's a sort of a day to day. We're trying to encourage people to use it on a daily basis, but only hold what they can afford to lose, if that makes sense. So if they're holding it for the long term, we kind of try and reiterate the point again and again that if you're going to hold on to this for the long term, then this should be something that you don't need urgently ever. So it's, yeah, the volatility is a really big risk. I'd say those are the two biggest challenges for sure.
In El Salvador, where Bitcoin Beach was inspired, the population doesn't really have a lot of access to the banking system. What is the situation like in South Africa? Does the average South African have access to like a bank account or banking services?
I think last time I checked, about 40% of South Africa was unbanked. So it's not as high a percentage, not nearly as high a percentage as it is in El Salvador. South Africa has a pretty well-developed banking industry. Cash machines are widespread. One of the very convenient things that you can do with the banking system in South Africa is you can actually send somebody cash, even if they haven't got a bank account, as long as you've got a bank account. You literally send them a PIN number to their phone, and then they could go to the relevant cash machine, and by entering the PIN number, withdraw cash from the cash machine without actually having a bank account. It's quite convenient because there are cash machines everywhere. So I wouldn't say South Africa has a major problem with an unbanked population. Obviously, 40% is not insignificant. It's still a significant amount of people in the country. And then obviously combined with the general distrust in the banking system, a lot of people aren't actually using their bank accounts for anything other than receiving a salary and withdrawing every last cent of it the day that they receive their salary. So a lot of people would literally receive their pay into their bank account, and then the day that they get paid, they would go to the nearest ATM and withdraw everything in cash. So there is that distrust. But in general, I'd say South Africa is pretty well serviced financially. It's not the same as what you. I think in El Salvador, it's something like 70% unbanked. Which is obviously much higher. So
maybe you compare South Africa's 40, you said approximately, and the UK is approximately 4. So it's like, it's a pretty big difference from, you know, like what I've grown up in, right? So like, to me, if someone says 40%, that sounds like a pretty big amount of people that are unbanked. And it's interesting you say about like the distrust in banks and people receiving and then withdrawing their salary into cash. I may have like zoned out for a second and missed like why that is. Like, why is it that people have such a distrust? Like, is there a history of banks collapsing or like governments taking money out of the bank like in other countries, or or is like, why is that?
Yeah, it's strange. It's definitely not because there's a history of banks collapsing. South Africa's banking system is very, very tightly regulated. The banks are quite conservative. You know, interest rates have never really been below 6% here. So it's quite a conservatively regulated industry. So I've never experienced a bank run in my lifetime, and neither have my parents. I think it's got to do with it's got to do with a general mistrust of the government and authority figures in general. Obviously, with South Africa's history being what it is, 90% of the population are black, and they have been, well, basically screwed over for generations. First through slavery and then apartheid, as recently as the early 90s. And so that general mistrust of authority figures, and kind of like sort of taking anything coming from an authority figure with a heavy dose of skepticism, I think it's got more to do with that. But that's a very generalized sentiment. I mean, it's hard to pinpoint exactly why people, and the queues are ridiculous at the cash machines on payday. It's like, these massive queues, people wait hours just to withdraw their cash. It is strange that they don't trust the banking system.